Welcome to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. I'm here with my compadre Egberto Willis on engineering. And there's so much to talk about, and I'm always afraid I'm going to run out of stuff to talk about. Isn't that weird? First thing I want to point out is early voting has started. Today was the first day. It runs through October 26th. It runs through October 30th. Early voting runs through October 30th. And I strongly recommend early voting. Do not wait until Election Day. Election Day is a pain in the butt. You'll have to wait on lines. You'll have to figure out where your precinct voting place is. Early voting is a snap. You can go to harrisvotes.com or harrisvotes.com, or you can go to texasvotes.gov, and you can find an early voting place that's convenient to you. Doesn't matter where it is. As long as it's in your county, I believe you can go ahead and vote there. So check out one of those two places, harrisvotes.com or texasvotes.gov. Find out where your early voting places are, and they keep great hours, and they're open for almost 2 weeks, and there's no excuse not to vote. And remember, the entire city government of Houston, let's not even talk about the propositions, let's not talk about HERO or bond issues, which I'll get to probably in the next week, but the whole city government, your mayor, your city council, your controller, everybody's up for election. And to call this an off-year election, which is what it is considered to be by the media, by politicians, that's crazy here, because for us, this is one of the most important elections we'll have every 4 years. It really is. So make sure that you do the best you can to learn the issues, learn the candidates. You know, one of the things that you can do if you're not sure quite where to begin, you can simply go to a search page like Google or Yahoo or Bing, and you can type in something like Houston election endorsements. And then you can see what endorsements currently are available on the web, and you can decide which endorsements you agree with and what reasons you might have for agreeing with them. And this is a great way to figure out what you want to do on the down ballot races. It can be hard enough when you have this many candidates running for mayor or for city council at large or city council districts. It's really tough to sort them out. And to go to endorsement pages and learn about who they endorse, why they endorse them, you can go to groups that you feel sort of reflect your philosophical bent. I look at the Chronicle. I look at the Bar Association, the Houston Lawyers. I look at the LGBT Caucus, which I actually find I agree with about 90% of the time. So, I mean, you find who you like, and then you can make some decisions without having to research everybody in depth, which is a very, very daunting prospect. So you do the best you can, and endorsements do help. I will tell you this. I have learned over time that some endorsements are paid for. So it's hard to know. But I was once working with a candidate. She did not have a very strong chance of being elected. She went to a meeting because she said that they were considering endorsing her for her position. And apparently they would have endorsed her for $1,000. Now, that kind of stuff is illegal, but it's worth knowing it happens. Now, there are lots of different ways that it might be framed. You know, it's like, well, we need money in order to print up this and in order to do that. So they didn't say we'll endorse you for $1,000. It was more like, we'll endorse you if you give us $1,000 in order to print up materials. But we know what this was about, okay? So, politics, seedy. Just before I came in here, I saw a headline, Texas defunds Planned Parenthood clinics, but Louisiana ordered to pay. And apparently, the reason, and I'm sure Texas will be ordered to pay as well, from the article, which is from Reuters. In a letter to Planned Parenthood clinics statewide, Texas health officials said all funding from Medicaid, the government health care program for the poor, was being cut because of what it characterized as program violations captured on videos. Quote, "The gruesome harvesting of baby body parts by Planned Parenthood will not be allowed in Texas, and the barbaric practice must be brought to an end," said Governor Greg Abbott in a statement. This is one of your prime examples of elections having consequences. Okay? It's not like there was an enormous turnout for the election for governor or lieutenant governor or attorney general. And I think it speaks poorly of Texas government, more poorly than usual, that they used these edited videos that were intended to twist the truth, and that they used these videos as an excuse to do something that they wanted to do anyhow. It's not like, oh, we're going to have an investigation and see what this is and whether we should cut their funding. No, 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 no. This is because, and I've said this before, conservatives are against sex. Okay, Egberto, did you hear that? Conservatives are against sex.
Why would you say that?
Because the whole point of the war against Planned Parenthood, the point for most people, most politicians anyway, for the war against abortion, is because they consider sex out of wedlock or recreational sex to be immoral. But therefore, anything they can do to exact a potential penalty for immoral sex, which is what they consider it, that is the goal of the right wing, to make sex, to penalize you for having, penalize a great word, to penalize you for having sex recreationally, whether in or out of wedlock.
What is very interesting is we look at the senator from Louisiana, David Vitter, and all the things that they preach about. David Vitter preached against abortion. David Vitter preached against extramarital marriage. And you know what happened to David Vitter? He impregnated a woman out of wedlock and then asked her to have an abortion.
Well, the thing about conservatives is it's all about do as I say, not as I do. And if I do it, please forgive me. Just forgive me. I meant to do what I say.
But if somebody else does it, it is the end of the
screwed,
world.
Screwed, blued, and tattooed, as the Blues Brothers used to say. We do have open lines. This is open forum. You can call and participate in the discussion at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I will also say that I've been making trips now to College Station. I don't know if it's the new transmitter, but depending on exactly where you are, you can receive this station all the way out to College Station, which I think is pretty impressive. That's 90 miles out.
Were you not able to get it before?
I don't know. And that's why I say I'm not sure it's the transmitter.
Were you able to get it clear, very clear in College Station?
It wasn't. It depended on where you were. I mean, literally, as I moved around the city, it would get clear, and then I would get interference from another station, and I might lose it a little. So, essentially, I think that's kind of at the boundary. 90 miles is going to be at the boundary. But I imagine that if you go maybe at 70 or 80 miles out, probably there's no problem with reception unless you have a really big obstruction. So that's pretty good.
Well, Summer said she went to A&M, and at the time that she went, she couldn't get KPFT out there, so it must be working.
Yeah, I was listening to it in my car. So that's good. So transmitter, yay.
Let me know when you want to talk about Canada now.
Okay, we'll get to Canada in a minute. I guess one of the points I wanted to make, elections have consequences, and we now have an election coming up, which they call an off-year election, which is going to determine pretty much your everyday life in this city. It's going to determine your property taxes, your flood control, your police protection, your sales taxes, whether or not you can feed poor people on the street. It's going to determine, hero is another one, it's going to determine how you live day to day. This is not an off-year election for Houston. This is the equivalent for us of a presidential election. And I know that most of you folks listening to me, I'm preaching to the choir. I know, at least anecdotally, that KPFT listeners statistically are probably a very high proportion of dedicated voters, which means that it is not only your responsibility to vote, it is your responsibility to talk to your friends and remind them to vote. Now, whether you talk to all your friends or the friends you think that will vote like you, that is your choice. But it is up to you to get people to go out and vote. 713-526-5738. Let's talk about Canada. I know you're very excited, Egberto.
The reason I'm excited is, we got a call, so I'll talk to you about that later.
Okay. All right. So we'll take a moment to get the call. There was an interview of Donald Trump by Stephanie Ruhle of Bloomberg TV. It was kind of an interesting interview, and I have to say I think that Stephanie did a decent job, and of course it's an edited interview, but I think that it reminded me that probably one of the worst things that we can do is elect a high-powered businessman as president. I think it's a horrible, horrible mistake. And we can go into that a little later, but right now I've got a caller. Let me first do a quick station ID so I don't have to cut off Scott. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. My compadre Egberto Willis has his own show, Thursdays from 3 to 4, Politics Done Right. Here, we do politics some. Okay, Scott, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Thank you. I voted this morning about 11 on at the center on West Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, parking lot was fairly full, but I found a place. In fact, a card pusher pointed out a parking place, and then I went in, and I did not have to stand in line, but there were people. So it looked like a moderate turnout, but I hear on Queer Voices this evening that the turnout's higher than it was.
I was listening
2 years
to that
ago on the first day.
I was listening to that on the way into the station. I think that one of the guys said it was like 8,000 or 8,800 votes for the first day, which is a higher total than usual.
Yes, now I remember that. Yeah,
very encouraging.
Yeah, I just hope Hero passes. I've been volunteering on it, phoning and posting on Daily Coast.
Well, I think that one of the strongest arguments for Hero is that if you don't want to see legal discrimination against your family members, your friends, and your neighbors, you have to vote yes on Proposition 1. It's just that simple.
Yeah, and I also think voters ought to be rejecting this kind of propaganda campaign against it. Like, when I was 14, I read a book by Dr. Douglas Kelly, who is the psychiatrist at the Nuremberg Trials. His last chapter of his book was How This Country Can Avoid a Third Reich. He had three recommendations. Barriers must be removed from voting. People must vote, and people must reject appeals to prejudice. They must reject politicians who do that.
So basically, they just have to stop being Republicans.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, the Republican Party has gotten very much that way. But I was
I used to be able to vote for Republicans.
I was raised one. And about 1967, I decided I was in the wrong party.
You know, when I lived in New York, we had Republicans that you could vote for. We had Jacob Javits, and John Lindsay was not a horrible mayor, although he had presidential aspirations and activities towards that.
You know.
I mean, it was a bipartisan city. The elections could go either way. And I have voted for Republicans in my life. Now, in Houston, in Harris County, there is actually only one Republican I know of that if I was in his district, I would vote for him, and that's Bill Yeoman. He's a justice of the peace. Bill Yeoman Jr. He's a great guy.
I
love Bill Yeoman Jr.
I worked with him once, about 40 years ago.
You know, he is, I've been in JP Court quite a bit because I had a small business. I would sue people who didn't want to pay, stuff like that. And I have to tell you, to the extent that it can be a pleasant experience, Bill Yeoman's court is a pleasant experience.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't take himself. I'm sorry?
I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, he's great.
I haven't seen him in many years.
I have not either. I haven't sued anybody. But, I mean, he educates you. He explains to you what's going to be happening, why it's going to be happening, how it's going to be happening. He doesn't intimidate you. He's like the 180 degrees from Judge Judy, okay? Judge Judy is everybody's nightmare of the judge you want to be in front of. Bill Yeoman is like, if you're going to go in front of a judge, you want it to be Bill Yeoman. I have an enormous amount of respect for this guy. I really do.
Yes. Yeah. Well.
And he's a Republican. I have to reiterate that.
You know, back in my Republican days, I thought Jacob Javits was in the wrong party.
Well, you know, there was a time when people said that Democrats and Republicans really weren't that different. And there was a time that on some level that was true, although there's always been some significant philosophical differences. But the thing is that they were all, to one degree or another, social liberals. To one degree or another. The degrees were different, but they were all social liberals, and then it got down to things like fiscal and policy beyond our borders. And that's where the differences were.
Well, I think the parties were more alike back in the 50s, but then people were not very socially liberal but back then, or at least elected officials were not.
You know, and by the way, I'm going to say we have open lines. You can call and participate in the discussion at 713-526-5738. Egberto and I were talking before the show, and we were having this discussion about whether President Obama, being the first black president, was really elected before the country was ready for him. And my position on that was obviously prima facie, he was elected at just the right time when the country was ready for him. But I think that there's a big difference between saying that the country was ready for him and the voters were ready for him. Because it's always a matter of who shows up at the polls, isn't it?
Oh, he got over 300 electoral votes both times.
And he got one of the largest overall turnouts of any presidential election in American history. I think it was like the second largest turnout in history.
And you know, well, some people were ready for him and some weren't.
But the people who
are against him, they've gotten a lot of encouragement from their leaders.
But there was the question of whether he created or instigated racism in this country. And my position is he didn't instigate racism. He simply revealed it. It wasn't new racism because we had a black president. It was old racism that suddenly couldn't contain itself any longer because we had a black president.
I agree.
So, I guess Egberto, you wanted to talk about the Canadian election. So, Scott, do you want to hang around for that or do you want to go?
Well, I guess I'm finished and I will go back to the other room and listen.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah, what this pretends, I think, Mike, the reason I'm kind of taking umbrage to what's occurring in Canada.
Okay, first of all, give the listeners at least 25 words or less of background so they know what we're talking about.
To be clear, we are an interesting country because there's a very major election occurring in Canada, and we have very little to speak about it. We've spoken very little about it here in the States.
Because we think of Canada as just sort of this big northern territory of the United States. You know, there was a radio station up in Canada that had a contest. What kind of slogan should Canada adopt as kind of their national slogan? And the two that I liked the best was Canada, America's top hat. And the other one was Canada, we've got America's back, which I thought was really cool on so many levels because it's true on so many levels. Should I go ahead and take Jerry now? Okay, Jerry, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, I was going to say Donald Trump's just said one thing that I've agreed with him so far on, I think, and that is that basically, you know, we got Obama because of old boy George there.
And, okay, connect those dots for me.
Connect those dots for you. Well, you know, basically it was a reaction against, you know, Bush got away with a bunch of stuff for a while, but those last 4 years weren't so great and everything, even though you know, he supposedly had a lot of capital, political capital to spend. It seemed to run out very quickly after he got reelected.
But why did that necessarily lead to Obama as opposed to Hillary or Joe Biden or somebody else?
Well, I think it was because the country turned seriously against the war in Iraq. And I think they felt like they'd been had.
Which they had.
And they had been up to a point, yeah, and everything. And I was one of those people because God knows I supported the war. But you know, I think that's really what it boils down to. I think that, you know, basically we got Obama in there because like I said, in essence, Bush, and see, Republicans have never dealt with the Bush legacy. You know, they never sit there, they don't like Bush, but they're never willing, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that he did that they like, but they're not willing to sit there and go, yeah, Bush did that and I supported it or whatever.
Well, if you think about it, Republicans are really, really interesting because they never want to deal with the Bush legacy. They never want to deal with the Nixon legacy. They call themselves the party of Lincoln, but they never talk about Lincoln. They always talk about Reagan. So, and by the way, they don't talk about the Hoover legacy either. They don't talk about the Harding legacy either.
No, and I'll tell you something else.
I mean, it's really interesting how many legacies the Republicans avoid.
Yeah, there's a lot more than that. Actually, I've seen books where Republicans and conservatives have actually, people on the right have actually written whole books on attacking Theodore Roosevelt, of all people, certainly one of the most popular presidents we ever had.
Not to the Republican Party. They hated him at the time. They hated him.
But he was a Republican.
He was a liberal Republican who today would be a Democrat. I mean,
well, probably. He'd probably be a moderate to conservative Democrat. That's probably true.
Yeah, in all likelihood.
That's true. But the thing about it is that it's amazing how they've turned around on their own legacy and their own history to a shocking degree. It's like you said, they don't say anything good about Lincoln either.
They don't even say anything good about Eisenhower. Eisenhower helped to win the Second World freaking War. He helped to end the war in Korea. But he was too liberal. He was pro-union. He was against the military-industrial complex. And it's like...
Oh, yeah, well, that's true.
The Republicans don't talk about anybody except Reagan, and they'll mention Lincoln in passing. But it's kind of amazing.
Even Reagan would have been too liberal. It's funny, some people, you know, if you compare... You know, right now, Tea Party people and Reagan would be running against each other. Basically, they'd be butting heads.
I think
guys like Ted Cruz, who's a Tea Party guy, sits there and says, well, you know, all these great things about Reagan. But in fact, Reagan did a bunch of stuff that Cruz wouldn't have agreed with.
Reagan has become a name that they worship, that they don't look at too closely.
No.
But they love Reagan. They love the Reagan myth, but they won't talk about the Reagan reality, which goes back to Republicans in denial. Maybe we should just call them the denialist party.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, basically Republicans right now, I've said this before on your show, Republicans are basically split two or three different ways, and they're all trying to shoot each other in the back. And even Barry has shown that that's pretty much true in different things that he said. You know, whenever I brought up, you know, Republicans, you know, a whole bunch of Republicans need their Social Security, he just sat there and said, let's double down on dumping Social Security.
Think about today.
You know, I'm just going, so you want to nuke out the bases, the electoral bases of your own party, Barry. Really?
Today, Barry Goldwater would be considered too liberal to nominate for. I mean, think about this. He was like this extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. That was his acceptance speech at the 1960 Republican convention. And today he would be too liberal. He would be too liberal. It's unbelievable. You know, one of the things, and I'm going to kind of throw this out at you. You don't have to address it if you don't want to, because I know when people call, they call about a certain thing, and it's like, well, I didn't call to talk about that. But Trump did this interview with Stephanie Ruhle. One of the things that he said was that he would appoint a Fed chairman that would be more agreeable to his policies. So the first thing is he made it very clear he doesn't understand how the Fed works. He doesn't understand that it is not beholden to the president or the Senate. He doesn't understand that the Fed chairman's term does not begin when the president's term does.
That's true.
Staggered.
Yeah.
So I want to butt in for one second because there's a caller that's listening to the show right now.
Am I driving someone nuts?
They're driving. They're about to go vote, and what they want to know is you mentioned something about the homeless or the feeding of the home, something on the ballot with.
Oh, no. That's not on the ballot. But there are two things on the city ballot. The city ballot has the HERO Amendment, mm-hmm. which will either allow equal rights under the law for everybody or not.
Right.
So I would strongly encourage people to vote yes on Proposition 1 for the city, which is yes, you want the HERO law to stay in force. The only other proposition that's on the city ballot has to do with term limits. And since you and I agree that elections represent term limits, and since the proposition itself seems to be very vaguely worded, I would suggest voting no on City Proposition 2. I don't know anything.
I actually agree with you on both of those points.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I don't know anything yet about the other propositions. What I hope to do is to have a little bit more to say about that stuff for the next show. I hope to be able to learn a little about the various propositions being posed.
The Chronicle did a good spread on that.
I must read it. My computer keeps crashing. It's driving me nuts. I get in the middle of an article, like, oh, I'm sorry, all of a sudden we've had a mishap here and the whole thing is shut down. Oh, my God. Okay, so, Jerry, what do you think about... Now, let's not talk about Trump as a clown, which is how he's sometimes framed in the media. He's certainly not a clown, whatever he is.
No.
I personally think that he is the best thing that could ever happen to the Democrats, not because he says crazy things, but because he says things that for the most part, the Republican Party as a whole currently agrees with, but knows they cannot say as a policy position because it would make them look nuts. And this is a guy that actually, in my opinion, says the stuff that the party as a whole believes that they have to keep sucked in, and that's why he's so popular. Because of all the people that go, thank God, somebody's finally saying what I actually think, that I don't have to be embarrassed to feel it anymore. I think that's the source.
I think that's true for the base. I think there's some Republicans who don't really quite think or feel that way. But I would just say this, the key difference between Tea Party people, to me, and regular Republicans is basically Tea Party people don't really care one way or another about procedures or whatever or what the damage or the consequences of what they want to do is. You know, they just want to go ahead and go full speed ahead and everything and just do it and deal with the consequences later. And regular Republicans are like, no, let's go a little more slowly, a little more gradually. And it's a much more of an issue of how you go about, implementing political change, in essence.
I have said in the past that I think that the current Republican Party, and I don't remember if this was true 30 or 40 years ago, to be very honest. I just hadn't paid attention yet that much. But I think the Republican Party, as currently constituted, is so wrapped up in conservative principles that they don't really care so much about conservative outcomes. So it's like we have to do this because it's a conservative principle, and then we're going to cross our fingers that it works out well, but it doesn't matter if it works out well because it's a conservative principle.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. And, you know, if we'd actually done what Republicans wanted us to do, we'd still be in a recession right now. You know, they wanted us to, you know, basically, you know, not do any additional spending or anything like that. And, you know, or stimulate the economy or anything, you know, double down on, like, paying off the debt or whatever. And that would have been disastrous at the time.
The Obama stimulus, if it had been passed the way he had originally proposed it, which had some tax cuts, but mostly it was infrastructure spending and support for public workers in states around the country.
Yeah.
If that had been done, and historically that is what was done, we would have been much further along in a much stronger recovery right now, but the Republicans refused to pass it, insisted on tax cuts, and what happens with tax cuts is people pay down debt. They pay bills. They don't stimulate the economy. They pay down debt, and they pay bills.
Well, that's actually what's happened this go-round because people got so burned in this. And also, it's abundantly clear that the government's not going to come to rescue for you. You know, if you owe a few thousand bucks on something and suddenly you lose your job, the government's, you know, they're willing to bail out to the tune of trillions of dollars, you know, the fire, you know, basically the finance, insurance, and real estate group business, but, you know, it's called fire. But
here's something to think about. I'm going to throw out a phrase, and then I'm going to give you a minute if you want to respond, then I'm going to go to Gary.
All right.
We've all heard about too big to fail. Is the alternative to that too small to succeed?
In this economy,
I mean, think about that.
Be the case.
Because, you know, if you have like a yin and a yang, if you can have too big to fail, the opposite of failure is success. If you're too big to fail, can you be too small to succeed?
Yeah, I think so. And I could point to some specific examples of that. But, you know, basically, you know, I think that, well, I just wanted to say I do agree with you on that. I think that's that can be the case. But also, I think that, also, I just wanted to say about the Proposition 1 or the hero thing, mm-hmm. is that, you know, you keep hearing this stuff about, well, you know, my wife or my daughter would be in the bathroom and some guy would come in there and everything. And my thing is that basically if that was such a big thing, then, you know, they would have happened a lot more often before the hero thing came up. It's funny how this was not an issue for, you know, 100 years. And now suddenly it's a huge issue.
Well, also, as the gun lobby constantly points out, there are already laws against that kind of thing.
Well, that's
so
true.
You just have to enforce the laws against that kind of thing and pass the HERO Amendment, and that's all there is to it.
That's just it. And then, you know, and but what I'm thinking is going to happen, actually, with the HERO thing is they're going to, you know, a bunch of people that should be voting for it are going to vote against it. A lot of African-Americans and Hispanics and Muslims are going to sit there and go, we don't like that because gays actually have some kind of, you know, can do this, that, or the other. And but they're going to be voting themselves out of the deal, too.
I, as a Jew, an atheist Jew, nonetheless a Jew, I will point out that anybody who has suffered discrimination, not because of what they did, but because of who they are, if you're a Jew, if you're a Muslim, if you're an ethnic minority, you should vote yes on Proposition 1 because you don't want to be discriminated against.
Exactly. And that's, you know, I'm sitting here arguing for it. I'm a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant straight, you know, guy and everything. I mean, I don't have a dog in this fight, but I just happen to agree with you. I think that, you know, if you're interested in having a level playing field and everything, then, you know, you need to have something like that.
Yeah,
you know, if you want to keep the level, you know, if all those voters want to keep the level, keep the playing field unlevel, I'm okay with that because, like I said, I'll benefit from it. But I just think on principle, you're right. We should try to aim for that kind of thing.
Equality before the law. That's the principle.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to let you
go,
Jerry.
Yeah,
thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Take care. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig. I'm here with my compadre on engineering, Egberto Willis, who has his show Thursdays, 3 to 4, Politics Done Right. Here, we do whatever. Gary, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Mike. Okay, I have a question, and it's going to sound like a setup, but it's not.
It's always a setup, Gary, but I enjoy you anyway.
I'm going to be honest. My primary issue is overpopulation, and I get upset with people like the Pope and the President who are babbling about climate change and don't address, you know, the issue. We want to treat the symptoms and not the disease. So in that vein, I have a question.
Okay.
You know, we have, from what I'm hearing, a serious homeless problem in this country. I heard about New York City and even Hawaii.
Hawaii declared a state of emergency now
right.
for homelessness.
And then, of course, we've got
I did a show on that, by the way.
We've got our unemployment issues and people that are, you know, can't find work. And, you know, there's a lot of stress out there for people. And so with that in mind, what do you think about bringing in more and more and more refugees letting people that come here from the South and, you know, forgetting who they are, what they are, what religion, what culture. It's just a question of humanity. If we have so many people in our own country we cannot take care of, cannot feed, cannot house, why do we want more? You know, that's what they're beginning to ask Angela Merkel, saying, okay, well, that's really nice of you to invite 80 people to the barbecue, but we only have food for 8. So what is your opinion on that?
Well, I think, first of all,
population-wise,
to get the culture. I think you're starting from a false premise.
Well, there's not too many people.
First of all, the United States and most Western countries without immigration would be declining in population. The replacement number is 2.1 children per female, I think it is, right? Per female. And right now in the West, typically it's running like 1.7, 1.9. Even in the United States, it's under the replacement number. So that would put us off a demographic cliff at some point, where you would have, like the baby boomers right now are creating that problem, where you would have an increasingly elderly population, an increasingly higher proportion of people that are retired without enough young workers to support the infrastructure and to pay the taxes and to basically do the things that need to do. Angela Merkel made it very plain that she would like to take in about 500,000 refugees over maybe the next 5 or 10 years, specifically because Germany's German population is declining. And if they want to maintain a viable social democracy, they must have workers in their prime years to support the
country. Can I ask you a sociological question?
Sure.
No, I don't want to be the devil's advocate.
I'll try to have an opinion on anything you throw at me if I can.
All right, you don't see any linkage here between the population of the wealthy Western countries and the population of the poor developing countries. Is there no link between the population of the people and the prosperity that they enjoy?
Oh, there's a very strong link, and that link has been established.
You want a worker class and just bring them in from Syria so they can man the factories
No.
while the rest of us drive Mercedes Benzes?
I'm sorry, how is your Mercedes doing, Gary?
Mine
isn't doing so good.
Well, you know what I mean. I'm talking about population here. And there is a reason why the poor countries are the overpopulated countries. Is there not?
There is.
Because there's not enough to go around.
Well, right? No. That actually
is... And then apply that to the entire planet.
Well...
And maybe you say we're going off a demographic cliff. Maybe we're stepping up the demographic mountain because then there's more for less.
Let me give you... I mean, I'm going to sort of take a sideways turn on this. I want to bring up mainland China. Okay, mainland China.
50-lane highways, you mean?
No. No, we're talking population, not traffic here.
Well, come on. Now you saw
No, come on. Don't divert me here. I want to make a point.
50 lanes in a traffic jam.
Actually, I just heard today that I-10 in Houston is the widest highway in the country, if not the world. I-10. Because we have like 12 lanes across. It's nuts. But anyway, let me get to China. China, since the 1970s, has had a one-child policy. So two people, one couple, having a single child. And the reason for that was they were doing some demographic extrapolation, and if they didn't figure out a way to limit population, they were going to end up with like 2 billion people by the middle of this century, and that was just unsustainable. So they had the one-child policy. They made some exceptions for rural families because, you know, they needed hands for agriculture and stuff like that. But now what's happening is those children from the beginning of that one-child policy, those children are in their 30s and 40s. Some of them are in their 20s. And the country has this enormous artificial demographic notch in it where you've got this sudden cliff that the demographics fall off, where all of a sudden you have an abnormally small number of young people and an abnormally large proportion of old people. You add into that the cultural issue of the killing of infant females. So now you also have, instead of the normal ratio of like 51 women to 49 men, which is the normal biological ratio in humans, now you've got a situation where Chinese men are importing women from other countries to marry. Consider this from the point of view of homogeneity. The country, from a population standpoint, is like 90% Han Chinese. Now you're getting to a point where the population imbalance has gotten so bad that they're having to import women from Africa, from other Asian countries, and China as a society does not look at foreigners generously. even my own niece, I have a niece in China because my wife is Chinese. And even my first visit there, when she met me, she started calling me. I can't remember the exact word right now. It's like the equivalent of gaijin in Japanese. And I can't remember. She was basically calling me foreigner, foreigner, foreigner. She was smiling. I mean, it wasn't hostile. But China is looking at a serious problem. And I think all of the geopolitical jockeying that they're doing right now, I've begun to think that they're doing it looking to the time when they're going to have serious demographic, economic, sociological problems inside the country, and they want to be in a strong position to prepare for it. That's my theory. So going back to your original question, immigration can be seen as the population of the world sloshing around from poorer, more densely populated areas to more affluent, more thinly populated areas. And the thing about education, and you're right, there is an absolute correlation between population and education. Because the more educated a country gets, and the more rights women have, the fewer children they have. And, I mean, when you think about it, having a child is physically and emotionally very, very taxing. And I think that when women have a choice, they just have fewer children. Aside from the fact that it costs money to raise a child, it takes energy and effort to raise a child, it's physically hard. I mean, remember, the mortality rate for childbearing used to be very, very high. It's not an easy thing to do. And I think that essentially...
Were you born before 1950?
No, I was born in 1951, so I was like one of the earlier baby boomers.
All right, we are age mates.
Okay.
And when we were born, there were 2 billion people on this here planet.
Maybe
and
less.
Now, in our one lifetime, it took 100,000 years to get to 1 billion. We were born, there were 2. And in our lifetime, there's 8. So you're telling me that when our kids grow up, that there's going to be 20? I'm going to tell you there won't be a human. They're talking about the sixth great extinction, and they're referring to animals.
Yes.
But I'm telling you what's going to go extinct.
Well, nothing. I don't fundamentally disagree with you. I think everything has an upper limit. I think we're seeing now with climate change, and, you know, you can argue over whether it's natural or human-caused or
a
little
mixture
of both.
There's only one religion. People ask me what religion I am. I ask them. I answer, is science a religion? Now, just like Mayor Bloomberg said when he was asked about the Republican stance on climate change, he says, I don't know if it's mendacity because they want to get reelected or ignorance because they don't understand the science. But you cannot deny the reality of science. And if you don't see what climate change, you know how many cars Volkswagen called back because of their issue? 11 million. That's one company. There are 5 billion automobiles on this planet.
Yeah, the whole...
Right now, as we speak, there are 20,000 jet planes in the sky, not to mention the coal plants and all the other things Obama's ranting about.
Let me just say that the Volkswagen...
Hold on. Do something about that. You know, they want to shut down the carbon emissions. How about donating condoms to the rest of the planet?
But...
my point, we're ignoring...
But condoms have to be used.
Putting a Band-Aid on an amputation here.
Planned Parenthood, by the way, one of the reasons that Republicans, conservatives, are so against Planned Parenthood is the name. They don't want parenthood planning because parenthood planning implies that you have sex for reasons other than procreation. Goes back to the first point I made in the show. But going now to your point, I agree with you, you cannot have an endless increase in human population without consequences. It simply cannot go on. There have been civilizations that archaeologists have puzzled for centuries why they disappeared, and what they're beginning to discover is they probably disappeared due to climate change. So you had empires, large civilizations in places where growing conditions were good and rainfall was reasonable, and all of a sudden things dried out and the civilizations literally dried up and blew away.
Well, listen, you know, there has always been variability in the climate.
Yes,
okay,
there's
that's
natural
why there
variability.
Evolution.
Yes.
However, I light a fire when I'm camping and I cook my hot dogs. That's a little different than 150 square miles burning in California.
Yes.
Okay, you see my point?
Oh,
we're
absolutely.
Ignoring the we, meaning the collective leadership of this planet. Oh, yeah, we're getting together to cut back on maybe some carbon credits and cut back on. But the real issue, there wouldn't be any issue if it wasn't the fact that we have quadrupled our numbers in one lifetime.
When I was 13 or 14 years old, I remember very, very specifically during the 1964-65 New York World's Fair, the population at that time was about 3.5 billion people. So from then to now, I don't think it's 8 billion, but it might be around 7.5 billion. The number that's normally thrown around is about 7 billion.
Right, give it 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not disagreeing. But I want to throw something out at you. If not for antibiotics, I would either be deaf or dead. That's a reality. I was prone to ear infections. I got constant ear infections. If not for antibiotics, the best case scenario would have been that I would have gone deaf by the time I was 5 or 10 years old. Or I would have died from sepsis. Now, multiply me by 3 or 4 billion people. And, you know, antibiotics were really the beginning of the population explosion on this planet. And then the Green Revolution, where they were able to, at whatever price, you know, environmentally, where they were able to increase production of food that allowed the population to expand further. But, you know, I don't want to start sounding like one of these people that's like, you know, yeah, the population can expand exponentially forever. That's crazy. But the reasons that the population is what it is because we haven't had a mass plague die-off. And we haven't had a mass die-off from famine, because those are the things that normally kept the population in check.
You know, the Germans we're all faced with a dilemma. It's almost a lose-lose situation. When you have a refugee and you have people that are fleeing poverty and war and they're hungry, they're human beings. You cannot turn your back on them. There's no way out of that.
I think that
the problem is that if more people go to Germany than Germans are there, you know, you're going to change the culture. You can't deny antibiotics or food or help to a human being. But you do have something that came along in the same time period as antibiotics. It's called contraception.
Yeah,
now, you can prevent a birth. I'm not opposed to abortion.
In the West.
I'm not in favor. I'm pro-choice.
In the West, where you can use condoms.
Contraceptives, you wouldn't even have that problem, would you?
But there are parts of the world where that's not done.
And then we're going to go over there and Bill Gates is going to cure malaria, but he's sure not curing overpopulation.
Okay, I will point out that the Duggars do not come from a poor, undereducated place in the world. Okay.
Who doesn't?
The Duggars. The people with 19 freaking kids, some
Duggars.
Of whom are apparently molesters. Okay. They don't come from some impoverished, isolated part of India or some impoverished, isolated part of Africa. The Duggars come from here. They have 19 children. They're doing everything they can single-handedly to prevent the United States from having a declining non-immigrant population. Okay, but I mean, what that shows is that irresponsible childbearing isn't just a problem for the third world.
But it's a question of quantity, all right? You got one Duggar, you've got 10 million of them in Africa.
I will tell you what I think is.
You know, you can't even. I heard a story about Mumbai. They say the population in Mumbai, you can't even walk down a street and turn around.
I have seen actually.
That's it's called developing India, but I've been to India and it's a modern country. There's plenty of automobiles there, and they have an airline, and they have a lot of advanced culture. A lot of Indians
but they
I
have
work
a lot
with
of
in
people.
Engineering. It's not that the people are ignorant; it's that the culture is resistant. It's, you know, just like I don't know the reactionary Republicans.
Yeah.
I call them the Retalibans.
That's not bad.
Okay, well, I'll let you go.
Okay, all right.
Bye.
Take care, Gary. Bye-bye. All right, we still have some time, and we still have open line 713-526-5738. We haven't had a lot of callers, but they've been entertaining. So you have another chance, Egberto, if you want to put in a couple of minutes about the Canadian election.
Well, the CBC has called the election.
And see, this is like the election program now. Right. We're doing Canadian election coverage.
Well, you know, I think one of the things is that every country in the world, when America is having its president, you know, electing a president, the leader of the United States, everybody knows about it. I am so sort of upset that our neighbor is having a major election right now. They're electing their prime minister.
We take Canada for granted.
Right, but it's
and we shouldn't.
But it's not only Canada. It's all the other countries in the world. They'll be having the only time that the elections really matter is if it's something that looks like it just may have an impact on our finance system or our. But anyhow, to make a story short. What's interesting is that the Liberals are kicking butt. They're not. They don't even have to form a coalition government like Harper had to do. They're going to be able to form a majority government. So far, they need 170 members of parliament. They've got 184 right now.
You know, I have given a lot of thought to this whole political pendulum thing we seem to be experiencing. And I think what it comes down to is that every generation has to make its own mistakes. And they make the mistakes of voting for Republicans, conservatives, let's say. Let's not just say Republicans, okay? Because there are Democratic conservatives, too. They make the mistake of voting for conservatives because young people, being a little more selfish, tend to think, well, gee, my taxes are going down and, you know, they're not forcing me to join a union, so I don't have to pay union dues, and this is great, and they vote for Republicans. And then 20 years down the road, they get wise, and they realize I'm coming to retirement. They want to cut my Social Security. They don't want me to have medical coverage. I can't get a job after 50 years old because nobody wants me. And what am I supposed to do? And the conservatives don't want to do anything for me, and they start voting more liberal. I think that that's actually a frequent pattern. I know it goes the other way, too.
Yeah, my concern is that.
But
I'm sorry.
Well, what I was going to say is, and then what happens is, at the same time that you've got this generation aging, you've got this young generation coming in, and they go through the same cycle. They talk about politicians like Hillary Clinton, help me out here.
Rebranding herself?
Not so much reintroducing.
Right.
Reintroducing, and you have a lot of journalists in their 30s and 40s and 50s going, who doesn't know Hillary Clinton at this point? She's been in public life for 40 years. What they forget is that every 8 years, you have kids that at 10 or 12 years old just become politically conscious, who at 18 and 20 are going to be in their first presidential elections. And you know what? They don't know Hillary Clinton, and they don't know Ted Cruz, and they don't know these people. So they're not being reintroduced. They're being introduced. So there's like an age chauvinism of people who are older, who have experienced elections for a while, and they forget what it's like when you are facing your first election and you really don't know these people.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, going back to the Canadian
elections.
What I foresee, I mean, I think it was sort of interesting because I don't know, for those who don't know who Harper is, the current prime minister of Canada.
Conservative
prime minister, and he's a conservative that's not typical of a conservative of these different.
He's an American style.
He's an American style conservative, unlike other conservatives in the other social democracies around Europe and in Canada, which have actually been more like the conservatives in these countries are more like centrist Democrats in America.
Typically.
Well, Harper was not. Harper was on the same wavelength of, let's say, the woman that was the Prime Minister of England,
Thatcher.
So I mean that's where we're at now. The interesting thing about it is, I think this is something that's going around. You see what happened in the UK when I don't remember the name of the person who took over the Labour Party in the UK, but he just took it away. The left wing Liberal in the UK took over the Labour Party. Here we have Canada, where the Liberals sort of just took control of the government altogether. We look at what's occurring here in America with both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, who are sort of the outsiders. But if you take a look at some of the stuff that Donald Trump is talking about, even though his economic plan doesn't reflect what he's talking about, people are starting to sense Well, the system has been taking advantage of us for a long time. The plutocracy has been taking advantage of us for a long time. And just maybe, I don't know, but just maybe we've seen occur in the UK. We're seeing occur here in Canada. We saw it occur in different states within the European Union. Is that contagion going to hit America in 2016? That's a question.
I think that conservative austerity has been shown to be an economic policy failure. And people aren't sure if the liberal idea of borrow and spend, I mean, it's really a classic Keynesian formula. The Republicans broke the Keynesian mold. You're supposed to run deficits during bad times and surpluses during good times. And the Republicans have been running deficits, big deficits during bad times and smaller deficits during good times. And that's the source of the problem, because they don't want a tax. There is a proposition right now. I don't remember. I think it's a Harris County proposition for cutting property taxes. It sounds great. You know, who doesn't want their property taxes cut? But you know what? The average person is going to save between $100 and $200 a year. But what that's going to mean is a reduction in road repair, road construction, infrastructure like water, like sewage treatment, like police, like fire departments. So you're going to save $8 a month, $20 a month. Now, to me, what I would like to see, if they want to cut property taxes, that's great. I want a revenue neutral property tax cut. So I think maybe a formula is, you have a certain property tax for the first $250,000, let's say, of a home value, and then for the next $250,000, you have a different rate. So it becomes a little more progressive. So when you start getting to $1, $2, and $3 million houses, they're paying a higher rate, not from dollar one, but incrementally as you go up through these steps. And that would be revenue neutral. Okay, let's cut the rate at the $250,000 level. Let's raise the rates on homes that over from a quarter to a half, from a half to one, from one to two, and raise the property taxes on those. And that way it's a revenue neutral change. But you know what? Nobody's going to do that, because ultimately the simple answer to that is cut property taxes and have a progressive income tax. And nobody in Texas is going to do that. But that's ultimately the answer. Everything else is just fidgeting around the edges.
That's true. But, you know, again, we have to hope, or one would hope, that going forward, people are actually just sort of waking up. But Mike, it looks like you don't have much time left.
I do not have much time left. So, is it time for music, or is it not quite that short? Oh, we got a little time. Okay, good. One of the things I would like to point out, how much?
You have 30 seconds.
30 seconds. All right, let's see. Okay, in 30 seconds, I would like to say that one of the best reasons not to elect someone like Trump, I'm not even going to discuss Trump specifically, I think that electing something like the CEO or the ex-CEO of a large corporation or an entrepreneur who has a multi-billion dollar corporation is because they're not accustomed to a democracy. They're accustomed to an autocracy. Well, you're saying, okay, make it quick, but you're not playing any music for me. There you go. How do I know I'm done until I hear the music? Thank you. All right, you've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 Houston, which you can hear all the way out in College Station, apparently. And my partner here, Egberto Willis, who has his show Thursdays 3 to 4, Politics Done Right. And remember, if your vote didn't count, they would not try so hard to suppress it. Go out and vote. Early voting is now. Take care. Speak to you next week.
Last Hustle Cafe on Saturday, November 7th. We thank our sponsors, Funky Bats, the experts on all things funky, Uncle Hank and Miss Linda, Bill Roberts with Hilton Hospitality and lovely wife Amada, the Big Easy Social and Pleasure Club owner Tom McClendon. We have need for additional sponsors for the event and excellent sponsored packages to offer businesses, individuals, couples, artists, professionals, or anyone wanting to support KPFT and enjoy the event as our guests. We hope you'll join these local businesses and individuals in supporting KPFT into the 46th year of operation as your community radio station. To become a sponsor, call Robin Lewis at 713-526-4000, extension 315. Please call and help KPFT live into the future.
You can make a difference by donating something, whether it's moving or not, an old car, RV, motorcycle, tractor, or boat, to KPFT's vehicle donation program. Whether we played your favorite song or helped you discover your new favorites, you listen because